We move to the last case today, Fetto versus Gonzalez.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. I see the time, and I will try to be as brief as possible. There's two fundamental issues with regard to this case and Mr. Fetto's case. We believe the immigration judge's decision is flawed on these two grounds. The first one is on the decision itself regarding the merits of his asylum claim. What we have in this case, the immigration judge, Mr. Fetto, presented a 100-page statement, an affidavit in support of his claim for asylum, and he testified for roughly 2 or 3 hours with regard in support of that claim. The judge decided that he had not met his burden of proving asylum in this case because there was discrepancies between the oral testimony and the 100-page affidavit in support of that asylum case. What the judge in his decision never mentions, never refers to throughout the whole course of the proceedings is the issue with regard to the expert witness who presented an affidavit with regard to his fitness, so to say. He found him to be suffering post-traumatic stress disorder at that time. The immigration judge in his decision absolutely did not refer to that one iota. I think that's extremely important because otherwise we have a 100-page statement that's clear, consistent, supported by documentation, supported by newspaper articles, supported by affidavits from other people, supported from articles released from Albania and country conditions reports in this case. And the judge.
But of course, on substantial evidence review, I gather it's really the last 35 or so pages of that lengthy statement that are focusing particularly on Mr. Fetto's circumstances. And the immigration judge makes the decision that some of the very terrible events narrated in that statement, like being shot at and being taken off, are just not the kinds of things that someone would forget and not testify to if he was able to testify to as much as he did. Now, I realize your response is that post-traumatic stress disorder is the kind of thing that makes people forget things, but the judge didn't accept that, and we're not de novo reviewers here.
Yeah, I understand that, but we don't know if the judge didn't accept that. We don't know if the judge even looked at it or even considered it. There's not a single shred of reference to that opinion from that expert.
But, you know, we don't, I mean, harsh as this court has been from time to time with the immigration judges, we really don't require them to discuss every piece of evidence put in front of them. He does spend a fair amount of time saying, here are the things recounted in the written application, here are the things that the oral testimony was. The overlap just or the inconsistencies are too troubling.
You know, we're not saying that the immigration judge has to go through every shred of evidence, every document that's presented. But in essence, this is a witness who's testifying. And this witness in his affidavit says he suffers from post-traumatic stress disorder in this case. And there are enough inconsistencies between the written application and his oral testimony where it brings into question whether or not he is actually suffering from that, and that's it's affecting his ability to recall. It goes to his credibility in this case. The judge had to have make some reference to that, had to take some consideration that it looks like we have no idea what he did with regard to that, whether he looked at it, read it, considered it whatsoever. I think to have a fair hearing, a fair record in this case should be remanded and let the judge state his positions. And if the position is, I considered it, I don't accept it, despite that, that's fine. We'll live with that. If the decision is, I didn't consider it, I want to review it again, then we'll live with that. But there must be some decision with regard to that specific issue on the post-traumatic stress.
How do we write the opinion you want? I mean, you want this particular piece of evidence in this case to have been discussed openly in the immigration judge's opinion. But how do we tell the immigration judges for the run of cases what they're supposed to do in these? I mean, they typically dictate them. You know, these are
correct
transcripts. Do we say if somebody introduced evidence from a witness, you have to say at least something about it just to make sure we know? Or do we say, how do we give them guidance?
Well, Your Honor, the immigration judge, when he makes his decision, should stay on the record. These are the inconsistencies that I find. Okay, he doesn't have to go through why he found them.
And he did that, and he said, I've considered all the evidence. Now, you're not confident that he really did consider all the evidence, but I think he said he did consider all
of it. But Mr. Fetto rebutted all the problems that he had with this expert witness. So the immigration judge, I believe, has a duty to address this expert witness, which refutes or rebuts those inconsistencies that the judge found. I'm not saying that Mr. Fetto if he has an article in the newspaper where he has an arrest warrant out there, the judge has to refer to that to rebut something. But I think in this specific case, when a person is suffering from an illness, that it should be addressed, because otherwise we have an incomplete record in this case, and we don't know if the judge considered it. It's unfair to Mr. Fettel if the judge did not consider it or give it any weight in this case. I think in order to have a fair hearing, a fair record in this case, it should be mandated upon the judge to either consider this or make some reference to it. Not all the other evidence, not all the tidbits, not the 100 pages, but this one is crucial. It's in essence a witness testifying. It's not some statement hidden in tab 27A or whatever. It's someone that's there, that's presenting an affidavit and should be considered. And it's uncontroverted evidence at this point.
Are any of the Fettos eligible for voluntary departure?
Yeah, with regard to voluntary departure, that's the second issue with regard to this case. The court, this court and the statutes, everything requires that the immigration judge admonish the Fettos and any petitioner before the immigration courts with what relief they have available. Voluntary departure is one. The judge never even admonished them, never even considered it only in denial. With regard to voluntary departure, there's two forms of voluntary departure, the one before the decision and one after the decision. The Fettos, the judge could have, if they would have known about it, they could have said, well, you know what, I'm going to accept voluntary departure. There's nowhere in the statute anywhere that requires that you have a valid passport to get voluntary departure. You have 120 days to leave the country. They could have got up, walked to Canada, and walked across the border. That's what they could have done. They could have drove to Mexico and gone to Mexico. They could have secured travel documents to a third country under voluntary departure. We don't know. The judge presumed to not give them that option. It's mandated, and I refer to the case of Asani in this case and Kosovo in this case, that it is a fundamental right that the judge advise them of their ability to seek a relief in this case. The judge failed to do that. It's incumbent upon this judge. This court has addressed that issue and looked at that issue and says it's a fundamental right in this case. It's not a procedural right. It's not where the judge, like you have in the case of Kaprick, where there was an interpreter problem.
That's but you didn't raise this point before the BIA, and the government argues that it's raised. Now, in fact, Judge Vinicord does make the statement that part of the requirement for voluntary departure is a valid travel document and passport. If you had wanted to say he's mistaken as a matter of law, you had a duty to tell the BIA that that was your objection.
You know, I did not represent the Fettos at the BIA. But
in the generic sense, I'm not being personal.
With regard
critical,
to that issue, Your Honor, it was never raised. It's
but they
clear.
Were represented.
They were represented. That issue was never raised before Judge Vinicord or the BIA.
But Judge Vinicord raised it. My point is, by the time you have Judge Vinicord's opinion in place, at the moment of going to the BIA, the lawyer for the Fetto family should have told the BIA that there was a mistake in the way voluntary departure was being an alleged mistake.
Your Honor, I would agree with you that an attorney should have said something at that point, but that's not what this court requires.
We require exhaustion because the statute requires exhaustion if it's correctable.
On a procedural due process violation, this court, in
the
case of...
Well, go ahead.
I apologize. No. This court, in the case of Asani and Kosovo, will clearly state that under that section of law which requires the judge to advise a person of their relief available, they have to do this. In the case of Asani, it was the same situation. In the case of Kosovo, it was the same situation in this case. The court had to advise them of suspension of deportation. There's no difference from advising someone of suspension of deportation and voluntary departure. They're both forms of relief that the person is entitled to get. In this case, Judge Vinicord didn't advise them, not at the beginning, not at the middle, only at the end, after the district counsel asked the judge, what about voluntary departure? And in essence, Judge Vinicord decided that, well, they're not going to get it. Okay, I mean, that's not the terms he uses, but in essence, that's the meaning of what he does in this case. And he totally dismisses that issue with regard to voluntary departure. The immigration judge
But the point of the advice is so that it will be considered by the immigration judge, and the immigration judge does consider it, albeit negatively, which would enable somebody to say to the BIA on appeal, we think we are entitled to that. That's my problem here. But if there had been silence in the record and no one even knew that it was there as a potential, you'd have a more compelling case.
But, Your Honor, in this case, the Fettos, if they would have been advised at the beginning, they could have chosen voluntary departure without going through this whole hearing. That's one of the rights they have. They said if you have the right to go to a hearing or ask for voluntary departure. The judge never discussed it, so they presume that they don't have that right, or they don't know they have that right. They go through the whole hearing. At that point, Judge Vinegar decides they're not going to get that right. He hears no evidence with regard to a passport, no evidence with regard to willingness to leave the country, no evidence whatsoever. We have four petitioners in this case. One of them could have chosen voluntary departure. In essence, Judge Vinegar decided not to give that option to anybody in this case, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you, Cal. Mr. Minnick.
May I please the court, William Minnick, representing the respondent.
Oh, you can get a glass of water if you want.
That might help, Your Honor. The record does not compel reversal of the immigration judge's denial of asylum. Petitioner's testimony was vague and general. There were unexplained inconsistencies between his hearing testimony and his written statement.
Could we talk about one that, in my view, the IJ overstated? At his hearing, Mr. Feto characterized a 1998 strike that he participated in as a protest over human rights. In his written application, he claimed that the strike was to protest the detention of political party members. And Judge Vinegar treated this discrepancy as if it undermined Mr. Feto's entire story. I mean, what's going on?
Your Honor is correct. That's obviously not the strongest of the inconsistencies noted by the immigration judge. I mean, if that was the only one, if that was the linchpin of the immigration judge's decision, it would be a very different case. But in the context of all the inconsistencies noted by the immigration judge and the fact that his testimony was vague and contradicted by the State Department reports, in the context of all the evidence in the case...
You know, we have repeatedly... you know, I don't like this word, but it's the real word, chastised IJs for relying too heavy on State Department country reports. I mean, did the IJ discount Mr. Feto's claim because simply because he didn't think it was consistent with a typical claim as described in the Albanian country reports? Because I have to tell you, Mr. Minnick, I don't understand what the IJ is talking about when he quotes the country report on page 9 of his opinion. The portion he quotes talks about claims premised on political persecution under the current socialist government and says, quote, those who truly were persecuted by the communists often resent the comparison. Both major parties trace their roots, I think he meant to say two, which he doesn't, but the communist regime both repudiated thoroughly. What does this mean? How does it relate to Mr. Feto's claim?
The petitioner claimed that he continued to be persecuted after 1991, after the fall of the communist regime, because the political party that was in power then, the socialists, were in fact just the same people from the communist regime. That was his claim at his hearing testimony, and the State Department reports cited by the immigration judge state that's not true. The communist regime has not been reconstituted in the current government in Albania. I think that's what the immigration judge is getting at, Your Honor.
Well, you quote the same thing, except you put the word two in your brief at 28 to 29. I guess there is a general issue about consistency here, because the immigration authorities are quick to point to claims of asylum that are based on things that are too general, like Amnesty International reports or the like of abusive practices, but then they turn around and use the State Department reports. Isn't the whole issue to focus on what happened to this person, this family, because it's a derivative, they're derivative claimants as well? So why bother with the State Department report at all?
Well, Your Honor, I think in this case, the immigration, judge did address specifically what happened to this family. I mean, he mentioned the State Department reports. Again, it would be a different case if he relied completely on the State Department reports and ended his decision after that discussion. But the immigration judge spent a great deal of time talking about different reasons why the petitioner didn't meet his burden of proof. His testimony was vague. It wasn't specific enough. One of the things he mentioned was a conflict with the State Department reports, and another thing he mentioned were the inconsistencies between the written statement and the hearing testimony.
Would it be fair to say that he decides as between those two things to credit Mr. Feto's oral testimony, and then looking at that, he thinks that's not a bad enough experience to count for asylum? You know, 30 minutes in the police van and then the earlier incident? I'm just trying to understand at least the government's position on this. Because if you take only his oral testimony, it looks like a very different case from the case that includes the written application.
That's right, Your Honor. I mean, the way we read the immigration judge's decision, it was a burden of proof decision. The petitioner didn't meet his burden of proof for a variety of reasons. The testimony was vague.
Right, you've said
things,
that. Yeah, right.
Okay.
Oh, my.
And again, going back to the inconsistencies, Your Honor did cite one that's not the strongest one, but I mean, some of the other inconsistencies were that he claimed in his written statement he was shot at, and this wasn't in the 1970s. This was in July 2000. He stated in his written statement that he was shot at. And then in his hearing testimony, he stated he couldn't even remember that.
But what about the post-traumatic stress disorder? I mean, people do suppress traumatic events, and so maybe he really didn't remember it. Maybe the immigration judge should have taken into account that kind of problem.
If he had blocked out the shooting, I don't understand why he would have mentioned it in his written statement then. I don't know why if he had blocked out the experience, I don't know why it would be mentioned in his written statement but not his hearing testimony.
Maybe it's a less stressful atmosphere when you're writing out the written statement. You're not in a courtroom-like setting and so on. I don't know. I mean, but it seems like the expert might have been able to address that.
As far as the medical report goes, the immigration judge decided to weigh it accordingly. He said he reviewed all the evidence in the record, and he determined the weight to give it, and this court can't reweigh the evidence. I don't believe petitioner argued before the board that the inconsistencies were a result of post-traumatic stress disorder. In his appeal to the board, he said he made the same argument he makes in his brief to this court. The immigration judge didn't consider the report, but he never made the argument that the inconsistencies were explainable because of post-traumatic stress disorder, and I would suggest the court lacks jurisdiction to consider that.
Is it your office's view that we cannot reweigh evidence even if the way the evidence is weighed, and I'm not saying that that's so in this case, is bizarre, as it often is when it comes to us, we still can't reweigh the evidence?
If
the judge's view of the evidence is utterly off wall.
I guess in your hypothetical, Your Honor, I mean the lie Zacharias says that the record has to compel reversal. I guess something could be so bizarre that it would compel reversal, and I guess you could then, Your Honor, if it really was so far out there that it would compel you to reverse. I mean, here the immigration judge reviewed all the evidence and determined not to weigh the medical report, not to give it that much weight. I mean, the report says that it was generated after spending 3 hours with the petitioner. It was generated by a graduate student under supervision of a psychiatrist, and it was based on information that was self-reported by the petitioner. So it's really not surprising that the immigration judge would weigh it accordingly. Regarding the voluntary departure issues and the rights advisement, if there was an error, this would have been the type of error that would have been correctable by the board. He never raised it to the board, and this court lacks jurisdiction over it. He was not eligible for voluntary departure. He said he
was there any evidence in the record to support Judge Vinokur's assumption that he didn't have a passport?
Well, I would suggest to the court
that other valid travel documents.
It's more than the immigration judge's assumption. The parties discussed it on page 136 of the record. It was a conversation. It started as a conversation between the INS attorney and the judge.
Mm-hmm.
Petitioner's counsel jumped in and acknowledged that his client did not have a valid passport. There is, I think, the passport he came in on, which I think was someone else's passport, or at any rate, it was an invalid passport. I think that passport is in the record. And they did not take testimony on whether or not he had a valid passport, but counsel conceded it at page 136 in front of the immigration judge. So the immigration judge correctly concluded that he was not statutorily eligible. In conclusion, the petitioner's testimony was vague in general. It was inconsistent. It contradicted the State Department reports, and the court does not have jurisdiction over the voluntary departure and the rights advisement issue. Unless the court has additional questions, that concludes the government's presentation.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
1 minute.
With regard to the issue of this, the country condition reports, the immigration judge went at great length taking apart that report, which is the Bible in immigration court, and using that against my client. At the same time, we don't know what weight he placed on this this medical report diagnosing with post-stress disorder.
Traumatic.
Yes, use the words there. So we don't know what weight he placed on, if any at all. We don't know if he even read the report, but he went at great length take one statement, one report written in Washington, and use that to refute every aspect of my client's case. I think in fairness, the judge should make a statement saying, you know what, you present this counterview, we should look at this counterview. With regard to voluntary departure, there is no place in the statute or in the regulation that says you have to have a valid passport. It makes somewhat logical sense, but you don't have to get that. You have 120 days, and if you get a passport, if you get some way to get out of the country, you're free to leave. You can't stay here, but you have to go somewhere else. That's the philosophy of voluntary departure. With regard to the other respondents in this case, the petitioner's case, there is no evidence at all presented whether they had passports or not. So this case should be remanded to address those issues. Thank you.
Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement. The court stands in recess till next week.